Interest rates have been slashed by another 50 basis points, with two more cuts on the cards in the next two quarters. The Reserve Bank also expecting the economy to contract by 7% this year, as opposed to 6.1% as forecast in April. Kevin Lings, chief economist at Stanlib, joins us now to analyze the decision in greater detail. Thanks so much, Kevin, for joining us on the line this evening. Were you expecting more here? Because we have had, the cautious analysts out there saying that any more would have been unwarranted, given the fact that we've still got to anticipate and wait for the previous rate cuts to take effect, along with some of the liquidity measures the SARB has initiated simultaneously.
Evening, Alicia. From my perspective, it was the right decision. We had certainly expected the 50 basis points. I don't think there's all that much merit in arguing that you've got to wait for interest rates to have an effect. The cutting interest rates at the moment are there to try and ease the pressure that households and businesses find themselves in. It's not about trying to get the economy going. You can't really stimulate economic activity when you're in a lockdown. So the cuts that we've seen so far this year, and certainly in recent months, the accelerated reduction in interest rates, I think is appropriate. I think it's appropriate in terms of what's happening in the economy. It's appropriate in terms of the inflation environment, and it's also appropriate relative to global interest rates. So I think that you could have anticipated some reduction in rates. It's very clear, though, that it is not as if you can put these interest rate reductions in place and then suddenly the economy starts to respond. That will only happen later on, when you move more fully out of lockdown.
Absolutely. So how much heavy lifting is the SARB doing for the economy right now, bearing in mind what you've said, that the capacity to spend still sits pretty restrained?
So the Reserve Bank's not doing a huge amount. Obviously, they are providing some liquidity support, and that is important in terms of the functioning of the financial markets, and it's critical that that continues. But even there, you would say the amount of liquidity that the Reserve Bank is providing now is fairly modest. In terms of providing consumers with relief, yes, I think that is substantial. If you look at the rate cut so far this year, 275 basis points, that's quite substantial relative to where we were. And obviously, interest rates now at pretty much historical lows. So I would say that relief that we're providing for people who've got debt, that is meaningful. There will be, of course, some people who lose out because interest rates are coming down. So if you look at people who are retired, who have savings, it does hurt them. But for the economy as a whole, it provides some support. Where I don't think you'll see interest rates work and do sort of heavy lifting is in things like buying houses, buying cars, going out and buying large ticket items, incurring more debt to expand the economy. I don't think it's going to have any significant effect there whatsoever. So I think that's much more to do with what the government can do to try and keep businesses in business, the type of social support they're providing. That also plays a critical role. So I think right now you're seeing both monetary and policy share the burden of trying to keep the economy reasonably intact and then at least provide the basis for a recovery once we've gone on top of this virus.
Let's take a look at both then, your monetary and your fiscal policy, because we've spoken about this before and we've been speaking about it, Kevin, for the longest while now, that fiscal and economic structural reform needs to happen in tandem with any monetary relief that does come to the fore. Are you seeing a step change? Because some were hoping that the least COVID-19 would do is trigger some kind of action and act as a catalyst more speedily?
No, unfortunately, I can't say that you've seen that step change. I do agree that there is an opportunity. I think COVID-19 presents government with an opportunity to kind of reset policy and to try and take a hard look at what is working and what is not working and try and put South Africa on a better growth path. I'm not seeing any of that materialize. At the moment, the focus is very much on fighting the spread of the virus and in supporting the economy in terms of social payments and then also through the banking sector. So I do think it's going to become an absolutely critical area of focus as time goes on as to how do we lift this growth rate? How do we get the jobs that we're losing at the moment back? How do we get the tax revenue picking up? And I think that that's going to require a much more substantial focus than what we see now, because if we go back to, say, 1% or 2% economic growth, that's not going to be enough.
Yeah.
The types of numbers the Reserve Bank's talking about, that's not going to be enough. We're going to find ourselves under enormous fiscal pressure over the next couple of years if we can't get the growth significantly higher.
Okay, so with that not forthcoming, Kevin, to the extent that it needs to be, how much more ammunition does the Saab really have in its arsenal? And let's perhaps go beyond how much ammunition it has. You know, how much can it actually afford to use, should it be using at this stage of the game? Because it's got a balance, of course, setting interest rates to stimulate the domestic economy on the one hand, and that's sitting constrained right now with the lockdown still in play, and balance that against actually attracting foreign capital, which the South African economy relies on quite heavily.
So it is a difficult balance. Obviously, the Reserve Bank is nearing that point where they feel they've done enough on interest rates. If I look at the decision, the fact that the vote was 2-3, mm-hmm. in other words, two members voted for only a 25 basis points instead of the 50, that's telling you that the appetite to keep cutting interest rates is not as strong, and therefore you could argue there is scope for perhaps another one or two cuts of 25 basis points, but not much beyond that. And I think it's for the reason you mentioned, the Reserve Bank would be worried that we still need to get foreign investment into South Africa. We can't afford to cut interest rates too aggressively in that context. And obviously going into next year, we're going to be off a very low base with inflation. And there will be a tendency for inflation to pick up next year, especially if there's a little bit more activity going on domestically. So I think the Reserve Bank is not just thinking about the immediate pressure the country's facing, but it's also looking out 12 to 18 months and recognizing that South Africa is very reliant on foreign investment and we can't afford to cut interest rates too dramatically at this stage.
Before I let you go, some have been pushing for the South African Reserve Bank to do more. Now, we know that not many were expecting it to announce anything along the lines of quantitative easing, the money printing policy that's long been pursued by the major central banks globally. What's your take on that debate that seems to be raging right now?
Look, I think it's a difficult area for South Africa to make progress in because we've got a substantial amount of vulnerability and a huge reliance on foreign investment. So I can't see that the Reserve Bank would entertain a very substantial pickup in, say, QE. QE in the way we mean it when it occurs in the United States or in Europe. There's too many risks associated for us, particularly in terms of the currency that could weaken as a consequence. Inflation can become a problem further out. So the Reserve Bank has made it clear that while they have bought some bonds in the South African market, that injection of liquidity needs to be drained out of the system in time. So I'm not convinced that the Reserve Bank has that appetite, nor do I think the Reserve Bank should venture into that environment. I think that in terms of domestic liquidity, yes, they're providing some, and I think it's sufficient. The focus needs to be much more on sound economic policy, sound macro policies, sound fiscal policies as the basis for getting the economy right. The Reserve Bank trying to follow a QE-type policy while at the same time government is not following sound economic policies. It just won't work. It's too much of a risk. I think the Reserve Bank is right in putting the focus back onto the broader macroeconomic environment and saying essentially that government policy has to be more appropriate in order for the economy to do better.
Let's leave it there, Kevin. Thanks so much for having joined us on the line this evening. Kevin Lings is chief economist at Stanlib. Well, that extra relief from the Saab will come in handy in some quarters. SPAR is bracing for extreme pressure on consumers. The retailer's interim profit has fallen close to 29%, partially due to the impact of COVID-19 on its recent Polish acquisition. In response, the company's taken a conservative approach to its dividend with a near 30% cut. And the company's CEO, Graham O'Connor, joins us now with greater perspective on that performance. Thanks so much, Graham, for your time this evening. So your Southern African operations seeing growth. We've had BWG Ireland posting solid euro-denominated results as well. Spar Switzerland improving. How long before Poland starts improving as opposed to being a drag on your performance? Or is that factor completely out of your control for now?
Hello, Lisa. Nice to be back on the show. We had solid results, as you said, really strong in South Africa, Ireland and Switzerland. Poland was disappointing, but we knew it was coming because of the delay in the license for the Spar license. That only came in February of 2020, so we lost some 6 months in terms of operations. Certainly, we've seen the back of the worst of the results. We're ahead of our targets on the wholesale side, and we've got the pipeline of Spar stores now being serviced, so it'll help matters enormously. And we see ourselves getting to a break-even point by the end of 2021, as opposed to early 2021, which we'd previously guided, and that's just a straight result of the year's delay.
Yeah. Having said that, with COVID-19 impact only having hit really from March, April, the assumption is that pressures are going to now start to filter through more so across the board. How have your South African operations been trading amidst it all?
Look, you know, we were fortunate that we got a lot of the protocols and the like from our international business, so we were a bit ahead of the curve in terms of what we were doing at retail. With the shutdown looming, the panic buying started, and we had quite a spike, probably added 2 percentage points to our sales for the 6 months. Post or during the lockdown, our stores have been trading pretty well. Our urban stores, because they're more convenient, because they're easier to get to, they've shown some nice increases in volume. But those stores, unfortunately, only with very few in the malls and the like, have been taken straight.
Yeah. Graham, it's the ripple effect, you know, to factors more so outside of your control that really become key down the line. You've highlighted that the expectation, for example, is that we're going to see food prices climb while consumers come under pressure. So what kind of margin pressure are you gearing up for?
Now, I think we'll be able to hang on to our margin because that's where our competitors will be as well, because none of us want to do anything stupid. We've always been in a very competitive space, whether it's pick and pay, shop out or ourselves, so we compete with each other on an ongoing basis. So I don't see much of that changing, but what I do see is some price increases, as we have with the deterioration of the rand and certain areas like rice and flour.
One assumes, Graham, that over this period so far that, you know, supply-demand metrics were thrown off on some fronts. Has that at all triggered any major disruptions on your supply chain?
No, not really. The suppliers have done a remarkable job in the supply chain. They've kept us largely in stock other than when we were in the panic buying mode or when the customers were in panic buying mode. And, of course, when you see volumes like that, then, of course, nobody can control the supply chain. But our supply's done really well. We kept our prices for the first 3 weeks of the lockdown. There were no price increases. So that worked out really well.
Yeah. From the panic buying, what kind of trends have you noticed as far as consumer behavior and spending patterns is concerned?
Well, the panic buying was just crazy, Alicia. I mean, we had one customer who bought 240 toilet rolls. And you say, well, why would you even do that? So there was stuff like that. Obviously, the masks were a big factor, which went through the roof, the demand for them. And obviously, all the sanitizing and liquids and the like went through the roof. What's happened subsequently is that there's been a big push on the butchery and on the produce side. And on the dry grocery side. So those volumes have increased nicely, but the panic buying is over, thank goodness. I am concerned about liquor coming back because that panic buying is going to be something like we've never seen before.
Yeah, let's leave it there, Graham. Thanks so much for having joined us on the line this evening. That, of course, Spar CEO Graham O'Connor.